Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. One thing I love about our top flight triathletes is many of them come from top level in other sports. And one of the sports I played growing up was a sport called rugby union. It's an amazing game. Still love it to this day. I don't think my joints and my bones would be able to handle a full 80 minutes of rugby. But someone who played at the highest level is Jo Coombe. And she's gone and done some amazing things in the world of triathlon as well. And we've dug into the archive, pulled her story out once again, and I'm going to share it with you today. Before we get into that, though, make sure you enter to win that Ironman entry, okay? Time is running out. The website to get to is thekonaedge.com/win. You can get your name into the draw. Just a couple of days left to get into the draw to win that. It's worth $750, and the announcement will be made early next month. You can get all the details on this URL. It is thekonaedge.com/win. This is the Coach's Corner, and it's time to chat some coaching. If you need some help to get faster, or if you want to get stronger, we've got access to a network of triathlon coaches around the globe that are more than willing to help you out. All you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. If you own a coaching business, or if you're a coach yourself and you'd like to get a bit of airtime here on the podcast, all you have to do is head over to that same URL, scroll down to the bottom, all the details are there. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Well, it's off to Melbourne we go now, and a huge pleasure to welcome onto the Kona Edge, Jo Coombe. Jo, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me, Brad.
Jo, I think we all love chatting Ironman and all things around Ironman, and you're no different.
Absolutely. I live, eat, sleep, and breathe it.
Jo, where was the seed first planted? I mean, we're particularly around Ironman. I mean, can you recall when you first thought, hey, I want to do this thing?
Absolutely. I can, actually. I was an ex rugby player, and moved over to Melbourne. And although you guys in South Africa might think that Australia is a rugby mecca, in fact, in Melbourne, it's not. So, I kind of gave the rugby away and just wanted to do some fitness generally, and ended up, doing fun runs and what have you, and then joined a swim squad. And I was aiming to just do a little mini try. That was it, because I couldn't even swim 200 meters. But there were guys in that squad who did Ironman, and a couple of them were actually professionals, and one or two of them had been to Hawaii. And obviously I'd seen the Hawaii Ironman, but I mean, it wasn't even on my radar, not even in the slightest. And I used to think, wow, these guys, you know, have done this Ironman, and like, it just seemed like an impossible dream to me that I could ever do it. But I guess that was the seed. That was like, you know, imagine if I could just do that. At the time, I literally could not have swum 3.8K, full stop. So, you know, it wasn't on my agenda, but that was the seed, I think, that was planted back then. That was about 2005.
Jo, I played rugby, and running, okay, I was a forward, granted. I scrummed well, and that was about it, but running was never high on my priority list. So you were obviously a back, I'm taking it, that you didn't mind running, because even as a prop, even today, running's not my favorite.
Yeah, I played on the wing for Wales, actually, so I got 15 caps, and so yeah, I was fairly speedy. But I didn't know I could run long distance at all. I think it's served me well, actually, having done all the speed work and the strength work for years and years and years. I think I'm fairly robust in terms of the endurance stuff. So I think it's helped. But I had absolutely no idea. When I did my first fun run, I just went flat out like kids do until I kind of had to walk, you know. So I didn't know I could do the long stuff back then. But I do love running. Absolutely love it.
Joe, I find it really interesting. We've just come off a pretty big mountain biking race here in South Africa called the Yapsa Cape Epic. And it's obviously the front end of that race is amazing to watch the elite athletes, but it's phenomenal to me how many ex-rugby players are taking up that sport. And I've seen it in Ironman here. And I'm not sure if it's the same in Australia, but we've seen a huge sort of influx of ex-professional sports people taking up the sport of Ironman as age groupers. Some are obviously better than others. But do you think, having played sport at a high level, a different sport, totally different to Ironman, has set you up for success in Ironman?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. From the mental aspect, learning to push early, you know, and having that drive. But also, I suppose, the discipline of, I mean, I trained as many sessions a week for my rugby as I do for my triathlon. So, for me, it's not a sacrifice, you know, and I think that makes a huge difference. Yeah. I suppose in Australia, there are quite a lot of sort of ex AFL players that have gone on. There are rowers that have gone on to sort of, do triathlon at age group level, particularly. So it does, yeah, I think it does cross over fairly well. We're not always, I mean, I'm 5'10" and, you know, I was over, 70 kilos when I did play rugby. I'm a lot lighter than that now, but yeah, we're not always the little tiny Tour de France types that might do as well in endurance sport, but I think we're fairly strong. So that helps.
One thing I'm starting to pick up with chatting to lots of top age groupers is they all competitive to the bone. That there's nothing they hate more than losing, and that's at anything. Are you pretty much the same?
Maybe.
Should I ask you question?
Yeah. Well, we're racing on Texas 70.3 in 2 weeks. And I've got a 20-minute head start on him, so it's kind of like, you know, he might come off the bike around the same time as me, but it'll be on for the run. So yeah, it's absolutely. I am very competitive, but I must say, what I love about Ironman is it's more about your own personal battle or your own personal improvements. It's not. Like, you have to stand on the start line of an Ironman and forget about who else you're racing. In my opinion, or in my experience, I've only started racing people in an Ironman in like the second half of a marathon, because that's when it really, you know, comes down to, can you hang on the longest or can you push the hardest? Until then, because you have to pace yourself at what you're capable of doing. You can't be looking at someone standing next to you and think, right, well, I'm going to beat you out of the water or beat you to the first turn boy or whatever, because that's a recipe for disaster, I think.
Joe, it's interesting you talk about racing yourself, and it's only later on in an Ironman that it does then come into play. But obviously, coming from a team sport perspective, the dynamics are very, very different.
Yeah, they are. But I love the camaraderie of Ironman as well. I think you form teams. I train with a squad in Melbourne, and I've been a member of several different squads through the years, and I love that. You know that, you know what it's like in the Ironman marathon, where everybody's sort of cheering each other on. Yeah, there may be competitions out there, but the camaraderie's still there. I think. Almost as much as it was in the team sports. In fact, I mean, you know how you get rivalry in teams. You know, people are vying for places on the same team, and it can be almost more political or more of a, you know, there's more of a nasty edge sometimes to the competition within team sports, I think.
Yeah, true that. Joe, let's talk about your first Ironman, and obviously after that first race, you were, this is cool. Talk to me about the process of actually wrapping your head around entering your first Ironman and going, I'm going to do this, because let's be honest, Ironman's a much longer day than 80 minutes of rugby.
Yeah, I won't lie and say there weren't a few alcoholic beverages involved. We'd formed a little group, and we called ourselves We Try, as in the French we. And we all went through our first like sprint season together, our Olympic distance together. Then we did a half Ironman in Busselton, which is Western Australia. And for me, that was like the ultimate. I'd just done a half Ironman. You know, I cried when I crossed the finish line with joy. And then we had a few beverages that night, and you know, most of us were like, we are not doing an Ironman. There's no way we're not doing an Ironman. And lo and behold, by the end of the night, we'd all made a pact that we were signing up for Port Mac the next year, which is, that's like Ironman Australia. So that was May 2007. And so in April 2008, I did my first Ironman in Port Macquarie.
I love that, Joe. And it's so often these decisions are very often alcohol in sort of fueled, yeah, aren't they?
Absolutely. And sort of egging each other on. But yeah, we all finished it. We all entered at the same time and we all finished it. And we all went and got the M.Dot tattoo the next day as well.
I love it. What a cool story. Joe, when did you realize, you know what, this is pretty cool. I want to get better at this and I want to race competitively as an age group and possibly and eventually get to Kona.
I think that particular race, my first Ironman, I was, you know, absolutely blown away by how much better I went than I thought I would, you know, by hours, a couple of hours. I did about a 12:11, so nothing amazing, but pretty good for a first time. But my run was what really, I went very close to 4 hours on that run. So I guess I knew I could run well off the bike and that was always going to make a big difference. And so I just wanted to see if I could shave some time off in my next Ironman. I'm a vet. And I was actually a dairy vet at the time. So I had sort of a whole year where I was just too busy with work to really focus on it. But then I came back to university to do a PhD and I had the time, to just, you know, put a bit more consistent training in. And we followed the Joe Friel, you know, the triathlete's training Bible, my husband and I, and we actually planned our whole year and came and raced South Africa in 2010. And I managed to knock about 40 minutes off my time, which I was happy with. But then I realized I wanted to just take it up that next level. And I got a coach, Sean Foster, who is based in Melbourne, and joined a squad and pushed myself very, very, very hard for the next sort of 18 months. And then went and raced Ironman France and came second in my age group with a 10:35. So that again, I mean, I was expecting something around the 11:30 to 11:45 mark. So that just absolutely blew me away that I was able to do that. And lo and behold, I qualified for Kona. So it was a shock. I hadn't said I'm going to go and do this race to qualify for Kona. I just wanted to do the best race I could. I found in that process I could climb, I could descend very, very well. I think that's the stupid factor from being a rugby player and all the, you know.
No fear.
And so I put myself in a position coming off the bike where and then I ran a 3:28 off the bike. So ran myself from fifth into second. And, I was absolutely just blown away and overjoyed and had a very, very quick turnaround to Kona because it's only 14 weeks between France and Kona. So, that was interesting. I think the whole thing was a bit of a dream, to be honest. I wondered for a while if I'd fluked it, you know, because I thought maybe it was just because I'd had such a good day in France. Could I do it again? And fortunately I have. So I've kind of put all those questions to rest.
Yeah, we'll chat about that second qualification in a Mo as well. Was it that performance in France where the penny really dropped for you, where you thought, you know what, hang on a sec, I'm actually pretty good at this. I can do this and be competitive.
Yes and no. I pushed. In training, I pushed so hard and I did actually end up sick, following that Kona. And I think I didn't know whether I, without pushing myself that hard and literally to the brink, whether I could ever do it again. You know, we always question, I think, whether is it just the talent or is it the talent and, or is it just the hard work? Did I really have the talent or is it a combination of both? So yes, I knew I'd had an amazing performance. I was willing to accept that, but I didn't know whether I was really that good, you know, consistently, whether I could pull out a performance like that again.
14 weeks from that race to Kona, if you could do it again, would you have preferred a longer sort of gap in between?
Totally. Yeah. Particularly because France took so much out of me. You know, I was very, very, as I say, I'd been sick in the lead up and I was very, very light. And so, you know, it's hard to then keep yourself strong for another 14 weeks. And remember that's winter in Melbourne. So I can remember, you know, I was hypothermic most of the time for all my training sessions. I just couldn't stay warm. So yeah, I'd love to have had sort of 2 to 4 weeks of recovery and then start building up, you know, maybe 15, 16 weeks or something. So, yeah. But look, no regrets, absolutely no regrets. It was still the most wonderful experience of my life going to Kona. You know, and I was just thrilled to be there. I had no expectations from the race itself that year. So, yeah.
It must be an incredible experience to experience. I mean, you've obviously experienced rugby, the highest level, and played some big games there. But to get to the Big Island and just look around and see the sort of athletes and the caliber of athletes around you, it must be a great feeling as an athlete who's performed in a different sporting code as well to know, hey, you know what? I've arrived. This is where it's happening.
Oh, absolutely. And I never made a World Cup in rugby. It was my biggest regret. All my three seasons were between two World Cups. So it was kind of like I'd played in European Championships. I played in the Hong Kong Sevens, but I'd never made a world level team. Do you know what? Or world, sort of competition. So yeah, you know, Kona is the epitome of the sport. And, you know, and obviously by then I'd watched all the DVDs from, you know, right back to as far as they went. And, you know, I was living and breathing it by then. So, it was just surreal, absolutely surreal.
I love that. And that first experience race-wise, I mean, did things go according to plan? You mentioned your qualification, how surprised you were. Did Kona surprise you?
Not really. I totally underdid my salt intake. And I've learnt that since. I've actually had my sweat tested and, you know, you don't do any of that scientific stuff when you just, it's your first time, I don't think. So, I had a pretty good swim for me back then. I'm a much, much better swimmer, 4 years later, but, I had a pretty good swim, really good bike, better than this year. And then the run, I took off as well as I had in France. And by the turnaround on Ali Drive, I realized I was in a fair bit of trouble. And it's likely that I had hyponatremia. I weighed in the same weight at the end of the race as I'd weighed in at beforehand. And you just don't do that in Kona, you know. So I think I'd totally underdone my salt intake. And I had, you know, dizziness and all those things that you get, which look – it is what it is. As I say, no regrets. I ended up running about four and a half hours. But it was very much a shuffle by the final 15K or so. But it left me with unfinished business, which is nice. Cause, you know, imagine if you went and had your perfect race in Kona, where's the attraction for going back, really?
Yep, true that. Joe, you race pretty hard and you talk about the having that hyponatremia and getting the dizziness and just pushing yourself to the edge. You've had a couple of experiences where you've done that. You've ended up in a medical tent in South Africa too.
Yes, I'm afraid so. I came back from Kona and as I say, I had a year where really things didn't go great. And it took me a long time to come back, I think, just from fatigue. But my comeback, I went to Los Cabos and raced an Ironman there. And that was kind of just a, hey, let's just tick another Ironman off. It happens to be still be my second fastest ever Ironman, which tells me a lot about, you know, not necessarily needing to push yourself to the edge and still having a good race. But my supposed comeback race was South Africa 2013. Sorry, 2014. And I stood on the start line and yeah, that's where that real competitive, you know, voice on the shoulder came up, and I stood on the start line and thought, you've got to go and win this age group, you know. And there was an athlete there from the UK who, you know, she podiums in Kona. Winning the age group was just never on the cards, realistically for me, but that was my mindset. And I just went out so hard. I mean, I can't even begin to describe. I pretty much rode the first 40K, and that was the first year they put the hills in South Africa.
Yep, it was a new bike course that year. That's right, yeah.
That's right. So I pretty much took that first 40K like an Olympic distance race. I've never overpaced so badly in any race before. And just completely overpaced it, and I think I was third out of the water, and I may have gone into second within that first 40K, and then pretty much the wheels fell off at 60K, literally, which is a long, long way from the finish line. And look, you know, you always think, well, it's a long race, things do go up and down, I'm sure I'll come good, and I just didn't. You know, it just went downhill from there. And I ended up, I walked the first 4K of the run. I did that out and back section back to transition. And then by then I was all over the road. I couldn't really even walk. And I think I just honestly just completely dehydrated myself. And, you know, riding at that sort of effort level without bringing in, you know, a higher level of nutrition or what have you, I just, yeah, just completely wrecked myself. So unfortunately, my only DNF, and I swear it will only be my one DNF in my life. You know, I do this sport to get the finisher's medal, honestly, Brad. Like it's such that the finish line is everything to me. The results are a bonus. So yes, I aim to achieve, and yes, I have goals, but number one is finish. So yeah, that was a huge, huge eye opener and a life lesson. Honestly, I've written blogs about this now since, because I think you can become so obsessed with the end result that you absolutely forget. I mean, in fact, imagine forgetting how to pace an Ironman when I was on my fifth Ironman by then. You know, so it's not like I was a beginner. But lo and behold, I did, and that was the ego and the focusing on the end result as opposed to just going through the process of racing at my pace, basically.
In most sports, you end up, and I'm talking again from a rugby perspective because I played a bit of rugby in my day too, but you learn a hell of a lot more out of the losses than the wins.
Yes.
And you obviously took a lot out of that one.
I did, yeah. And I sort of, I came back, I had to regroup. I was absolutely devastated. But I kind of thought to myself, well, I mean, obviously you then question, well, do I want to do the sport? You know, have I become so obsessed by this goal of Kona? And it was Kona that was my goal, you know, have I become so obsessed by that I've lost that sort of just love of the Ironman sport. So what did I do? I went and entered another one when I got home. And that's me. I mean, that's me to a T. You don't, you know, I thought, well, it's all or nothing. If I can get through another prep, and especially through winter, and race, and it was Malaysia in the September of that year. It was late August that year. If I can get through a winter prep and I can race Malaysia with joy and just to finish another Ironman, then I'll know one way or the other, you know. And along the way, I'd have a nice holiday in Malaysia, you know, at the end of our winter. So that was kind of the plan. And, we came away with my only Ironman win to date. So
Do you think there's a big lesson in that?
Huge, absolutely massive. I was a lot more relaxed about my training. I'd made a decision that I would give myself the ability to opt out of any session I felt like opting out of. And of course I didn't, because you know, you don't. You commit to the prep, and so you do tick off the training sessions. But I did things like I like running cross country races in the winter, and I'd given those up because I thought they would hurt my Ironman training. You know, because they're on a Saturday afternoon, so you've got to somehow fit them in around your long ride and your long run on a Sunday. And I'd stopped racing them. And so for the Malaysia prep, I went back and I did every single cross country race I could, you know, and it was just, well, if I do them on dead legs, then I do them on dead legs. Or if I don't feel like riding 5 hours beforehand, I'll only ride a couple of hours, you know. So, and it certainly didn't hurt me. I think, in fact, I know one of your questions coming up is about sessions that I think have helped me along the way, and I'll answer that one for running my cross-country races. Absolutely.
I love that.
So
That's absolutely amazing. And just sort of then knowing, and also that was a fair gap between your first qualification in France and Malaysia. And you said after that one in France, you wondered if this was a fluke. Did you realize in Malaysia that it wasn't, that is like, you know what? I've done it again. I'm obviously good enough to be here.
Yes. Yeah. 'Cause it was brutal. Malaysia is just, I can't begin to say how hard it is. The run in Malaysia was harder than the run in Kona, both years that I raced Kona. And this year people were saying it was hot on the run. So, it was like a cauldron in Malaysia. You just, you know, couldn't escape it. And there were pros sitting in the gutter in tears, you know. So absolutely brutal. And I actually, because it was one of those time trial starts, you didn't know where you were in the field. So I knew I'd come off the bike in second place, and I knew who was ahead of me. She was a Swiss athlete, but even when I'd overtaken her, I didn't know whether I'd gone into the lead in real time because we'd done this time trial start. So it was one of those races where I had to keep pushing to the very finish line, and you know, I don't know that I've ever pushed that hard in a run at the end of an Ironman. Even in France, where I ran the 3:28. So, having worked for it that hard and knowing what it took to get it, yes, I thought this isn't a fluke anymore.
Joe, one of the big challenges of living in Australia, in Melbourne, and we have the same issue here in South Africa, is that the Ironman race calendars skewed very much, all the big sort of European races are in the European summer. So if you want to race in those, and you talk about Malaysia, that's towards the end of winter, you've got to train, and your big blocks of training are in a Melbourne winter, which, let's be honest, it's not the greatest at the best of times. It has its moments. But how do you cope with that? And obviously the change in heat, because if you think about it too, although it's starting to warm up in Australia come October, it's still you training through the sort of big winter blocks. How do you get yourself right from a heat and conditioning perspective to race in those races?
A couple of things. Well, firstly, I have to be honest again, I've changed my career so that I have the flexibility to travel more. So I work for the university now, and they're unbelievably supportive. So for both Malaysia and Hawaii, I had the opportunity to get out there early. In Malaysia, unfortunately, I had a family funeral to attend in the UK, but the university were okay with me then just going straight on to Malaysia. So I had nearly 2 weeks. In Kona, this year I had, I think it ended up being over 2 weeks, probably more like 16 days. But I have also traveled, for example, to Vietnam last year in May, straight from Australia. And I'm going to Texas in a few weeks straight from Australia. And I do sauna, sessions. So I follow a protocol that's actually, it's online, and it's written by the Australian Army, for when they send their troops overseas. where you basically get in a sauna every 48 hours for up to an hour at a time. And it's from about 10 days out, 10 days from when you want to be acclimatized. Now, how much that helps, I'm not sure. I certainly think it helped me in Vietnam last year to race the 70.3 there. And I did it before I got to Kona so I could kind of go straight into proper training, you know, once I got to Kona. And I felt like it didn't take me as long to adapt. So I do things like that. I've sat on the wind trainer with my heating on 30 degrees, you know.
as one does.
Which is, oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. But, yeah. I think it's, there are things you like that you can do. And look, some people might say, oh, they're the few percenters. I actually think acclimatizing to heat is much, much more than a few percent, because once you break down in the heat, it's all over. You know, I heard Cameron Brown, he spoke before Malaysia about adapting to the heat, because he's a Kiwi who comes from quite cold conditions and seems to race brilliantly in the heat. And he gave some amazing tips like that. But what he said was, if you let your heart rate get too high in the heat, you know, it can take you an hour to come back from that, which it means your race is all over, you know. So, so it's about also being realistic about pace. In Malaysia particularly, I saw people who had an idea of what pace they wanted to be running. And this happens in Kona, I think, from having watched people as well. They have an idea in their mind of what pace they want to run. And if their body's telling them they can't, they just ignore that and they try and keep pushing to the point then that they can't run anymore, you know? Whereas if you go out with an idea of what effort level you can give and let's ignore the pace and you're listening to your body, then I think, you know, you'll have a much better overall race. Personally, I think that.
I love that. I think that's brilliant. You mentioned your first Kona experience. You left there feeling you had a little bit of unfinished business. Have you sorted that out on your second visit?
Yes and no. So my one goal going into this Kona was to run a sub 4 hour run because I thought I was capable of that, and I achieved that. I ran 3:54, so I'm absolutely over the moon with the run. But my bike was much slower, and I've got a new coach, and I went to my new coach and I said, I don't care about the bike in Kona. You know, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with training on the bike, especially those long, long, long rides. And he absolutely took that on board. And so he was very conservative with my bike program. And we pushed the run more than the bike. So I ended up doing about a 6:25 bike, whereas last time I went sub 6 hours. So it was slower this year, I think, on the bike. To be fair, we had the wind change, you know, coming back from Waikoloa, which just so I had basically 50k of headwind. But still, to me, I think I should get a lot closer to 6 hours than I did. So, yeah, I need to go back in time and put the whole three disciplines together.
I love it. Joe, can I ask you just to move around a bit? Sorry, I seem to have lost you there just slightly.
That's okay.
There we go. That sounds like it's better. So you were saying that you seem to you want to go back and see if you can string all three disciplines together.
Yeah. So my swim has come on just so far. I keep pinching myself. So I came out of the water 15th in my age group in Kona this year, which was just absolutely. I was thrilled with that. And my swim coach is he's just a legend in ultra marathon swimming, John Van Wiss. And so he's doing wonders with that. So I know that my swim will be where it needs to be the next time I get back there. I'm working on my bike. I've deliberately chosen 2 time trial A races this year because I love the climbing and because I love the more rolling type courses, and Malaysia was more of a hilly course than I usually than time trial. I've deliberately set the challenge of doing two time trial races this year, and that's Texas 70.3 and Frankfurt. And that's to try and just set that challenge of becoming more of a time trialist, because let's face it, Kona isn't, you know, a pure time trial course, but it suits the time trialers, because of the wins. You know, if you can sit in that time trial position and keep pushing, you'll do well in Kona. So if I do go back there, I need to nail that time trialing ability. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. And yeah, the run, I now believe I can always pull out a good run when I want to, as long as I do the training.
that's the little disclaimer at the end. As long as you do the training, I think that's in anything,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah, you can't get away. You can't fake an Ironman, put it that way.
Yeah, too true. Joe, I have to ask, you've played 80 minutes of really physical rugby and you've raced Ironman. What's physically hard on the body?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. Playing against teams like Samoa and New Zealand, where you just get absolutely smashed, nothing ever has hurt as much as that. The next day, you know, I mean, I've dislocated a finger, I've broken a nose, things like that. Just that sheer physicality, that hurts way more. You know, it's like I've got DOMS at the moment because I did my first really hard hill run in a long time at the weekend, and I'm walking around going, this is like the first rugby game of the season, you know. So it's that, you know, real sore muscle feeling. I don't think – if you're fit enough for Ironman, you don't get that. You know, you can walk around the next day. Marathons are a different story. I've destroyed my quads running marathons hard. But an Ironman marathon, I think you can never push so hard that you're actually destroying your muscles like that. But I think that – it's the fatigue. It's the deep, deep, deep fatigue that Ironman, you know, I think so many people underestimate how long it takes them to come out from that. So I think if you've raced an Ironman, if you've done a good Ironman build and you've raced it to your capacity, you know, it really, realistically, it's going to take you 4 to 6 weeks to come back from that. And that's the kind of fatigue that I guess I'm one of these bloody-minded people that will try and ignore that, and that's why I've come unstuck in the past. You know, I've come back too soon, or I've started doing intensity too soon, and my body just hasn't come back from that fatigue yet, you know?
You seem like someone who doesn't like having unfinished business. South Africa?
Yeah.
Is that still unfinished?
I'll come back. I'll come back to South Africa. We love it. My husband's raced South Africa 4 times now. And, you know, I think he likes the fact, being a 6'6" ex rugby player himself, that he's not one of he's not the tallest man in the entire field, you know. So, but we love the people. We've got friends now in Johannesburg that we've met through racing, in PE, that, you know, are friends for life. So, we'll definitely come back to South Africa. And yes, I'd like to come and have a good race there. And, you know, I think maybe I'll set the target at a podium as opposed to trying to win my age group this time. But no, I'd like to come back. Yeah.
Well, you may or may not be pleased to know they've changed the bike course again. So,
yes, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's more time trial again now, isn't it?
Yeah, there's still one or two hills, probably a bit more than the first bike course, it does seem a little bit flatter than the one with the hills. So, yeah, we'll let you know in a couple of weeks because that's when that's happening. So, yeah, it should be a goodie.
Yeah, we'll be watching. My coach Xavier Coppock's actually coming over to race it, so we'll be tracking all day.
Fantastic. Joe, it's been awesome catching up. I've loved chatting to you. I'm going to get you on again to chat about your swim, bike, and run and nutrition and see what you do in those sort of disciplines, but we'll save that for another time. Thank you so much for your time today.
Sure, no worries. Thanks for having me on, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge. We'll be right back.
I'm guessing that the Kona Edge is not the only podcast you listen to. If you're anything like me, you probably listen to a ton of different podcasts. I think at the moment I have 10 or 15 go-tos that I listen to every single week. And if you listen to a lot of podcasts, at some stage you've probably thought about starting your own. Well, the good news is it's easier than you think. ThePodcastingAcademy.com is giving you the opportunity to get your own podcast started right now. The Podcasting Academy is a 21-day, step-by-step online program that will get you from zero to podcast in just 3 weeks. Right now, thepodcastingacademy.com is offering listeners of the Kona Edge a 25% discount. All you need to do is use the word Kona at checkout to qualify. Head over to thepodcastingacademy.com to find out more. Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.